Hello and welcome to BSN Extra. I'm your host, Jason Barfield. We got a good show today. We're talking NCAA baseball. The regional is this week in Baton Rouge. Bearcats getting set to take on Oregon State on Friday night in the first round of the regional. We talked to Jay Sirianni the other day, got his thoughts on everything. If you missed that podcast, go check that one out. Some good stuff there from Coach. Today, we're going to talk to a couple of the national guys who cover this. It's going to be a Cespedes Family Barbecue Shock Factor Podcast, BSN Extra Mashup. And Jordan Schusterman from Cespedes Family Barbecue, Stephen Schock from the Shock Factor Podcast will join me here, and we're going to talk Bearcats, we're going to talk Baton Rouge Regional, and a couple other things that are going on around the country getting ready for this tournament. We'll have all of that in just a moment here on BSN Extra. Hey Bearcats, Sam Houston Athletics is moving to an all-digital ticketing platform beginning in the fall. Take advantage of the new ticketing system by accessing your season and individual game tickets online. Easily transfer tickets to family and friends and avoid the ticket lines on game day. If you have any questions, reach out to the tickets office at 936-294-1729. Eat them up. And welcome back to BSN Extra. I am happy to be joined by Jordan Schusterman. Jordan is part of the Shock Factor podcast, Cespedes Family Barbecue, just a huge baseball guy, college baseball guy. And so glad to be joined by Jordan. We got to know each other down in Round Rock this year and, wanted to bring you on, Jordan, and just talk some college baseball with the regionals. You know, I know when we talked back in, how was that, February, you know, we felt like this Sam Houston team was a regional team. And it was an interesting journey to get here. They had to do it the hard way and win the tournament and come out of the loser's bracket. But I think in the end, this is where this team probably belonged at this point in the season, though.
Totally. And thank you for having me. It's always good to catch up with you, Jason. It's funny because, right, February, obviously, that's super early in the season, right? So how much of a conclusion we're really going to draw. But I remember coming out of that week, you know, they get those first two wins, beating Iowa, beating K-State, and then they get, you know, stomped by LSU on Sunday, which was no shame. Like, they had already essentially won the weekend. It was a successful trip down to Texas or down to the Round Rock Classic. And then they lost their next four games. And I remember after they lost the Illinois series, I was like, oh, man, like, that's too bad. Like, I think the Bearcats are going to be good, but my momentum towards the excitement was a little bit slowed there. But then obviously they picked up, as you said, they did it the hard way, but they still are coming in with a good bit of momentum. And the stat that jumped out to me just on the Bearcats is like, they have the most hits in the country. They have the most hits in the country, which is a very basic way of thinking about it, but it does kind of, that does reminisce of like, that's what they look like when we watch them in Round Rock. So it makes sense.
Yeah, the offense, it's always funny because Jay Sirianni talked about this down in Mesa. And, you know, especially with him being a pitching coach is his background, he said down in Mesa, he goes, if our offense carries us, we're going to be fine. No mention of what the pitch, you know, normally, especially when you get into tournament play, a coach will talk about, you know, the fundamentals and the pitching and the defense. And he's like, our bats play, we're going to be fine.
But that's the funniest part is, in some senses, I mean, yes, we sort of knew that was going to be the identity of this team anyway, but also, like, kind of college baseball right now, you know? Like, it is definitely a run-scoring environment. We know that homers have certainly been up. But for Sam Houston, it's not just the homers, right? It's the doubles. It's like, it's just base hit, base hit, base hit, base hit. And it is a complete offense. It is a lineup you don't want to mess with. And honestly, you know, going down to Baton Rouge, obviously, LSU represents that in an even more extreme way. But I'm curious with a team like Oregon State, which maybe is not quite as star-studded as we've seen in years past, but they still have some guys that can absolutely mash in the same way. And I'm curious to see how offensive this regional does get.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's talk a little bit about the regional. Obviously, LSU is the big name there, top five program. I mean, number one throughout the year, you know. You know what kind of talent they have. You know, you've got Tulane, who's kind of the Cinderella story, 19-40 on the year, and, you know, they get into it. And so I think it's kind of easy to look past this, you know, 2-3 game. But, you know, talk to me a little bit about Oregon State and kind of, you know, that's a program our fan base isn't going to be as familiar with. I know there's a lot of college baseball history there, but, you know, what do we have to expect? What can we look forward to seeing from that program?
Yeah, you know, like I mentioned, not a star player, that's just because the standard has been set kind of so high for them in recent years. Of course, seeing them win national championships, producing first rounder after first rounder after first rounder, guys like Adley Rutschman, guys like, you know, Nick Madrigal, who hasn't been as good in football, but was certainly an amazing college player. But hey, Trevor Larnach has been fantastic this year. We know the kinds of guys they've produced. And this year, it's not like they were disappointing. I mean, they finished second in the Pac-12. And, you know, going 18-12 there, you know, winning 39 games. Like, this is clearly a complete team. And when you look, but again, it's like they don't jump off the page as much. Is that also just the product of the Pac-12 and West Coast baseball and those teams just not getting as much shine as teams in the other parts of the country? Yes, I would say it is definitely that. But I also think that it probably doesn't help that their best players aren't, you know, their first baseman, Garrett Forster. He's, you know, he's kind of a draft guy, but their best player is a sophomore in Travis Pizana, Australian kid. Fascinating story to see him end up in Corvallis, and he's been by far their best hitter. We kind of saw how impressive he was last year as a freshman. But I feel like sometimes sophomores, and you guys know this with Walker Yannick, right? Sometimes sophomores kind of get lost in the middle because it's like, okay, we know they're awesome, but they're not freshmen, so they're not like, you know, the new thing on the block, and they're not draft eligible yet, so I don't have to think about them in a pro context yet. So they're kind of in the middle. I think Walker Young is a great example, and I think Travis Pizana is another one of the best sophomores in the country, which is really impressive. But and on the mound, like, again, are they probably deeper than Sam Houston? Yeah, probably. I think Trent Sellers is the most interesting guy for them. I'd be curious if he's going to start that first game or the second game. He's a guy who is really, really impressive at the NAIA level at Lewis and Clark State, a powerhouse up in Idaho, and he made the jump to Oregon State in this year, and he's been fantastic. So it's probably a deeper roster, certainly a team that we have seen in the postseason, not too long, you know, a good amount recently, but it's not quite as many names that are you know, recognizable immediately.
You know, and I think one of the things with you know, with Sam Houston that can be so frustrating for a team like, you know, Oregon State and LSU and you really anybody that, you know, they've got arms and, you know, you almost expect at this time of year for those arms to kind of take over. And, you know, but because this lineup, the way it's built and it's, you know, you've got, you know, I mean, you can put a Miles Jefferson in the nine hole and the guy's hitting double digit bombs this year. You know, I mean, there's just so much, you know, 340 hitter that you can put in the 7-8-9 spot. There's not a break in the lineup, and that I think that's one thing that causes challenges, that when they get to hitting and they get on a roll and it's just relentless. I mean, we saw that in the WAC tournament. You know, they had a stretch there in the championship game where the first 14 runs of the game were all two out runs. I mean, it was just, I'm sitting there, you're like, I knew, like, in the first inning, you know, three runs in the first, and they all came with two outs. And then you get about – then they have an 11-run second inning. And about halfway through that, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I'm like, I think they've done all of this with two outs. And the inning ends, and I'm like, I don't know that I've ever seen a game where you score 14 two-out runs, much less in the first two innings of the game. But it's just – it was nuts because it was just constant and – Utah Valley couldn't get out of it. They couldn't get that last out, and it was just hit after hit after hit, every ball going in play. And, you know, I think that's something that when you get to a regional that you can kind of stun somebody because they may not necessarily be expecting that.
72 runs in their last four games is laughable, right? And you say, oh, how do you get to the most hits? Well, you pile up like well over 50 hits.
I think, it was 70 hits. I think 70 hits in the last four games of that tournament.
Yeah, and 70 hits, 72 runs, and 70 hits again. But that's what it felt like watching them in February, right? And I think, but to your point, you mentioned Miles Jefferson. To me, that jumps out to me about the, you know, looking at the stats is like, okay, they've got seven guys with over 100 total bases, right? Which is ridiculous. And Carlos Contreras isn't one of them. And I know Carlos Contreras is what we saw him do last year. I know he, you know, disappointed Round Rock. Clearly has struggled this season. But, like, that's amazing. That's amazing. And some of those guys we had, you know, with Wischkowski, I think we had high expectations for. We mentioned Walker Yannick. I know Clayton Chadwick. There's a lot of hype around him relatively. But we got to talk about Tyler Davis. And we got to talk about Joe Redfield. Because Redfield definitely caught my attention in Round Rock for sure. And I was like, oh, okay. And he's like normal age. Like he's a regular 21-year-old good college baseball player, which again, not a lot of those these days. I mean, I'm partially kidding, but it's a nice
compliment. You're not.
To, you know, 24-year-old Tyler Davis, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's it's a nice balance. But the Tyler Davis thing, I don't think I totally processed it. Like we talked about it when we saw you in February. It's like, who is this guy? Like he's just batting third and playing first. Like, hasn't he been a pitcher for the last 5 years?
Yeah, Friday night and starter in 21, you know?
Friday night starter in 21. And I know he hit pretty well in junior college, but that was 4 years ago when he did have some time at the plate at Panola. But this is ridiculous. I mean, he's got – this is like the fact that the numbers that he's put up is not just like, oh, like, pitcher has turned himself into a useful hitter. Like, no, he's been dynamite. I think he has the third highest batting average in the country. Which is just laughable.
And last I checked, does he lead the nation in hits? I mean,
oh, that's a good question.
I want to say, like, in total hits, I think he may lead the nation.
I think,
yeah, he does.
Third in, yeah,
104 hits.
Again, this guy did what, like 20 at bats last year, and basically was not a full time hitter at any point. Like even in junior college, he was mostly a pitcher, and he hit like pretty well when he did play. It's nuts. It's completely nuts. It's a story that I hope it really gets more love on the broadcast this week.
And it was gonna, you know, it was almost last year when he got moved to first, it was gonna be like an experimental thing, and you know, he was still gonna pitch a little bit, but you know, we think we might like something there with the bat. And then he gets the Tommy John, and he's out. And all of a sudden, you're like, well, so much for that. You know, that would have been a fun story. And you almost don't think about it again. And even this year, he gets off, and you're like, okay, that's a nice start. You know, it's a good start. And then every single weekend, you're like, you know, you're doing your game notes, and you're prepping for the broadcast, and you're just like, okay, he's still top five in the country in hits, and he's still, you know, he's still this in, you know, in batting average and everything like that. And so – yeah, it's pretty incredible the year that he's put together.
Yeah. So he's, and again, like I, there, it is a very real thing. Like if you're older, it was easier to, like, I get it. Right. And they, but he's not the only one. And to me, it's still impressive just because of how few reps he's gotten. Right. One thing, some of the 23, 24, 25 year olds in college baseball now, it's like, well, yeah, they're succeeding. They've seen like 10,000 pitches or whatever. Like they've been it because they've seen so much. It's all those reps are building up, not to mention obviously the physical advantage of being older and bigger and stronger, whatever. But for him, it's not the case, right? He just hasn't been hitting, and now here he is just raking. But to your point, I mean, the lineup up and down is just so deep and so fun to watch. And I'm curious, like, how the pitching's shaking out. You know, I know in our interviews, the guys are making a lot of fun of our friend Stephen Beard, but it seems like him and Colton Atkinson have really kind of at least settled in to, you know, give him a shot when you don't – it's not like you have to pitch a complete game shutout when your offense is this good.
Yeah, and, you know, both of those guys got touched up hard in their first outing in the conference tournament. But, you know, kind of the – I guess then the benefit of that is they were able to turn around and they were available on Saturday. And, you know, especially Colton Atkinson, I mean – and I talked to Jay Sirianni about this the other day, and you know, I was like, you know, you have Colton who only threw 47 pitches in his start before coming out, and you've got him available on Saturday. How easy of that a decision was that to throw him? And he said it wasn't necessarily a matter of if you're throwing him, but when. You know, when do you decide to use him? Because he had only thrown 47 pitches. They decided to start him in the championship game, and, you know, it also helped that almost immediately he's got a 14-run lead, and, you know, but then he just goes into cruise control after that and looked more like the Colton Atkinson that we had seen all year long.
I mean, and I know he ended up having a solid season, but looking back at his game log, I mean, we saw his best start against Iowa mm-hmm. back in Round Rock. I mean, he was seven scoreless in that with just two hits. So if he can, you know, if he can find something there, and again, good to see him how he finished the tournament after that first rough outing was definitely good to see. It's going to be about the bats. It's really that simple. I think the storyline in this regional that is going to be most interesting, and I don't know if Jay Johnson has talked about this yet, but a lot of discussion about whether you hold back Paul Skeens for Saturday. This is a very interesting, because on one hand, why are you wasting Paul Skeens on the team with 40 losses, right? And I know Tulane with 40 losses is probably not, like, they're probably not a 40-loss true talent team. Like, the American's pretty solid and whatever. You can have weird years where, you lose 40 games, whatever. On one hand, you see teams do that all the time. It's not uncommon to throw off and to save your guy. But the difference is that the calculation here, when you see the way that the rest of the LSU arms have been in recent weeks, can you risk it? To me, if you can't beat Tulane, if you're LSU and you're supposed to be this juggernaut and you can't beat Tulane without Paul Skeens, you probably don't have much of a shot in the long haul anyway, right? That's kind of where I stand with it.
Yeah.
At the same time, I would be very curious if they do, if they, and again, they should be able to beat Tulane anyway, whatever. If Sam can win that first game, you know, you didn't have to see.
Here's your reward. Congrats on beating Oregon State.
I know that LSU, you know, really just boat raced him, just scoring a million runs in that Sunday game in Round Rock. But Paul Skeens is a bit of a different beast.
Yeah.
And the thing about that, too, is like, I think this is such a funny potential, whether it's Skeens or whoever. It's so funny because coming out of that game in February, it was like, well, that was weird. We just played LSU and they kicked our ass, whatever. We don't have to think about them anymore. Like, yeah. Boom, here we are.
Then,
here we are.
That's funny. I was
in Baton Rouge now.
I was almost, when they popped our name up in the regional, and I was like, okay, we're going to LSU. I mean, like, back of my head, I'm thinking, can Iowa be a two here? I mean, is there a possibility of having a full Round Rock reunion here this weekend?
And then let me tell you, I mean, a little too soon here because I know they're not very happy about it. K-State, I know they didn't look great that weekend, but they were you know, bubble out. And they barely. I know Pete Hughes has put out a statement about how they just went. And that's fair. I think they had a very legitimate gripe. But, no, I agree. I was like, that was a fun pod. Let's just do it again.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny kind of looking at the situation with Skeens and what LSU might do there. We were in that same boat with them in 2013. We were down in the Baton Rouge Regional. We opened with Louisiana. LSU played Jackson State, and so they pitch off, beat Jackson State. We upset Louisiana, and our reward was Aaron Nola on Saturday night. So, you know, we've been there before. Now, we did tag him for five runs in the first, and, you know, and it took LSU about six innings to get it back, but, you know, it was an 8-5, I think 8-5 final in that one, but, but yeah, so we, you know, we've seen it before.
Oh, that's a great call. That's fantastic pullback. That was 2013?
2013. In fact,
there you go.
I'm not going to say we pitched off, but our Saturday night guy was Caleb Smith. So we had Caleb Smith versus Aaron Nola there on Saturday night. Of course, both guys still throwing in the bigs now. But yeah, that was that 2013 regional down in Baton Rouge.
Well, and here we are 10 years later. The thing is as insane as this sounds, because Aaron Nola has been one of the best pitchers in the big leagues and was the top 10 pick. Skeens is way better than Nola was at the time.
Yeah.
we were just nuts, right? And it's not to say that you can't hit him around. I mean, when we have seen Skeens be hittable-ish sort of kind of, like, it can be with the long ball, you know? Like, obviously, he's supplying a lot of power. You got some dudes that can put the bat on the ball. I think it would be a really fun matchup. I also think it would be obviously by far the best pitcher you've seen this season by a factor of a million. And that would be, like, I think, like, the step up from that, from the pitching, presumably we just torched for 70 runs in the WAC tournament, would be a nice little dose of reality. I think Oregon State, presumably they're going to beat, if they in this situation, they are going to have to beat a pretty good pitching staff in Oregon State on Friday. But yeah, that I'm so rooting for that. In terms of, like, Saturday games that I'm hoping for, it is Skeens versus Sam Houston.
I don't know that I'm hoping for Skeens. I'm hoping for Skeens versus Oregon State in a Saturday morning elimination game.
Oh, and, wouldn't that be nice?
And we've got Tulane on Saturday night, you know. See if ESPNU still wants that game or not. I don't know. There might be some shuffling with the broadcast schedule that night if it's Tulane Sam Houston instead of LSU Oregon State.
That's a great call. Here, I'll say this though: if Tulane beats LSU, like I'm not even sure people are going to notice what happens the rest of the regional. The Oregon State. I can't even imagine what the scene will be for the Oregon State Sam game if Tulane somehow wins. Like I don't know. This is all kinds. This is easily one of the regionals I'm looking forward to the most. Like it's not even this and Clemson are the two I'm circling.
So what's your plan for the weekend? Are you going somewhere? Are you sitting on the couch and taking it all in? Kind of what's your regional plan?
Yeah, good question. I think I'm still sort of kind of sorting that out now, getting up as many screens as we possibly can, trying to max out the Wi-Fi here in the office, in the home office. I will probably be covering a major league game on Friday, which might make things a little complicated, but Saturday is, you know, clear the deck. We are putting up as many screens as possible, just parking it on the couch and just, you know, consuming as much as we can. So that's usually my regional strategy because it's overwhelming. And, you know, squeeze play gets you pretty far. That is good. That helps for sure. But it's their bases loaded or whatever we're calling it. I know each ESPN network calls their thing for softball and baseball something different, but that I'm looking forward to for sure. Like that does most of the work for you. That's my general plan. I'm trying to lock in. But I'm telling you, if it's Skeens versus Sam Houston, that will be the biggest screen that I have. We'll have that game.
And can we start this lobbying process now? I need shock on the desk with runes for the squeeze. I need that to happen. I need a full day of shock and runes on squeeze play. And I don't know who we need to talk to make that happen, but that would be incredible TV.
Here's what I'll say about that. I think there's a chance that will not this year, as far as I know. I could see that happening in our lifetimes. Maybe that's the best way to put it. It is kind of a that job is both having done a whip around show before for MLB. It is both the most fun and also very challenging. And I can it's even like. For regionals, I can only imagine how nuts it is. And first of all the credit goes to the production staff because producing shows like that is ridiculous. But Runes is just such a champ at that. Like, I think Steve would be both perfect at that and would be have no idea how to handle it. Like, so, which could be great television for sure, but you know maybe a little bit risky to throw him in there. He should probably get some reps during like conference tournament weekend or something before we send that live.
It would probably be so maddening for whoever is producing that because you have no idea where he's going with it. And all the prep that you put into a show like that would probably be right out the window as soon, you know, 5 minutes into the show.
Yeah. Also, like, Steve would have to learn how to talk a lot faster. Like, he would need, Steve's voice is one of his great qualities, but it is also if you're trying to bounce around, like I could imagine Steve like getting into a deep, you know, reminiscing about a story about some random backup catcher. And they're like, Steve, you need to shut up.
Meanwhile, we've seen three new games already. You know, exactly. We've already been to three different stadiums and, you know, he's like, I want to go back to East Carolina. And, like that game ended already, but you know.
Yeah. It's like, no, dude, we got to move it along.
Well, what else nationally? What else when you look at the bracket kind of jumps out at you, you know, outside of the Baton Rouge regional when you saw the names being called and kind of what were some of your instant reactions? You were like, ooh, that's going to be fun.
Sure. Yeah. So I would say the two I would highlight, one would be Stillwater. Stillwater was nuts last year. I don't think it's possible to be as nuts as it was last year, but the teams that are there have definitely have the ingredients, the power, the homers, some, you know, high-end pitching. Love Oral Roberts as a 4 seed coming in on like an 18-game winning streak, just, you know, kicking, just dominating the summer. I mean, just they have just been running the show over there for a while. And then DBU, 9 straight years in a regional for DBU, which I believe is the fifth longest streak in D1 baseball, which is amazing. The Dallas Baptist has one of those streaks. That's impressive. And then Washington, another interesting Pac-12 team that has some fun players to watch. But the one I mentioned earlier, I think Clemson, because one of the biggest storylines I was watching before the selection show was, especially down the stretch as we saw, okay, Tennessee would not be hosting. Where would they go, right? Where was Tennessee going to get sent? Because obviously Tennessee is not anywhere to what they were a year ago, but at home they have looked close to that at times. And the pitching hasn't been quite as good as we expected, but like I think this is possibly a perfect place for them to go and still succeed on the road. And I can only imagine the fan base between Clemson and Tennessee. We talk about spicy Saturday night. Clemson versus Tennessee in the 1-0 game potentially. And I don't want to overlook Lipscomb. And Charlotte especially has also had a great season. Charlotte quietly with the guy, Cam Fisher, who now has the most homers in the country. Just very swiftly passed Jack Caglione in the last week or so. Very impressive for him. But that one could get feisty in a hurry. Obviously, the Tennessee arms are going to have to show up. And we'll see how their offense travels because they just have not been the same team on the road. But I think this environment could kind of spark them to kind of get back into the mix here. That one's going to be really fun.
All right. Well, we've done quite a bit of time already. We probably went longer than I wanted to. It's going to end up being an hour-long podcast between you and Shock. But I do want to talk a little bit about, you know, the Shock Factor podcast this year and kind of what that was like working with Steven and, you know, and just kind of being kind of more involved in the college game on a week-to-week basis and really kind of diving in on that and being another voice for a sport that has been historically underreported, undercovered, and being able to add another voice, another outlet for talk and conversation about college baseball because it has been sorely lacking for a long time.
Sure, yeah. And when we hooked up with Steven last year, like that was kind of, I mean, for those of you, us, or for those people who have kind of followed Jake Mintz and I and the work that we've done covering MLB for the most part of the last 10 years, like we always want to stick together. And as you saw, you know, when we went through February, like you could quickly understand why we would want to work with Steve. But because honestly, like what fuels what Jake and I do for so long is that we just love hanging out and talking ball, right? And Steve is fun to do that with, and he obviously brings a very unique perspective as a recent D1 player who played for 3 different schools and has all kinds of connections and experiences and people all throughout the game, as we've seen, which is great. But yeah, it's really cool, and I would say that getting more into the college game on a consistent basis helps me stay kind of locked in and motivated and inspired about covering baseball in general. And I think I've told people this all the time, but they ask, oh, do you get burnt out? It's like, if I'm bouncing around different kinds of baseball, then I'm not going to get burnt out. If I was only doing it, if I was only forced to do cover MLB, like MLB writers, God bless them. I don't know how they do it. I could not only watch one team nonstop like that. That's just because I love the sport too much and I want to learn about the sport too much to limit myself to a very limited scope, to one level, to one team, to one whatever. And so college baseball is just there's a never ending, and the tournament is a great time, right, to learn about all these different teams from all these different conferences and all these different parts of the country. And like, that's why coming down to Round Rock was so rewarding for us, right? Because to get to learn about a team like Sam Houston and get to learn about a team like Iowa, like those positions just make me so excited to stay learning, to stay connected and keep covering it. And Steve just makes it all the more fun, and that makes it easy. So that's kind of what kind of kept us going, and we're excited to keep it rolling. We'll be in Omaha again this year. For at least the first few days, and we're looking forward to that, and I'm sure we'll be seeing the Bearcats there too.
I hope so. Okay, real quick, getting back to Baton Rouge one more time before we get out of here. I'm not going to ask you to make a prediction because, you know, it is a Sam Houston podcast. I don't want you to be on the spot there, but for Sam Houston to come out of this, what has to happen for them to find themselves playing on the final day, put themselves in a position to get to a super like they did in 2017, where they knocked off Texas Tech and got to the super regionals in Tallahassee?
So I would say that two main things have to happen. First of all, as you just, we talked about the starting pitching. I'm not worried about the offense, right? Like, I feel like, are they going to score 70 runs this weekend? No, they're not. But are they probably going to put up some runs and give their team a chance? Yes. And so I would have to say that the most important thing is probably going to be a combination of the starting pitching going deep enough into games to where we're not taxing the bullpen like crazy in the first two games. And in combination, if we assume that LSU is the team to beat, I think LSU is going to have some scares this weekend. I would not pick against them to come out of the regional, but there will be moments where we are worried about LSU this weekend. I really do think that will happen because of just how shaky that pitching staff is and what these lineups are capable of, like Sam Houston, truly. At the same time, like, you have to hope that they start having to kind of button mash with the bullpen sooner rather than later. And you just have to hope the offense is just grinds it out. And listen, there are very few pitching staffs with that deep, even for one regional for three games. You see what you saw in the conference tournaments across the country. Sure, it's not quite as many games, but like, if you can start taxing these bullpens early, it's just going to make it really hard to come back on Sunday and feel good. Like, people talk about the concept of Sunday starter. That's essential. So few teams have a good Sunday starter anymore, let alone Saturday starters, honestly. So I think it might just end up being a slugfest. I also don't know what the forecast is going to be. But I don't know if that will maybe impact conditions in terms of what the offensive environment will be. But I would say, saving the good reliever, make sure we're not taxing the good relievers too much too soon, and just hope the offense just rakes and makes the magic happen.
Well, as far as the weather, it's South Louisiana in June. So whatever it says it's going to be tomorrow it'll say something completely different. So I think we can go down there and expect that for sure. So Jordan, appreciate you joining us. Where can we find all your content and where you're going to be posting stuff this weekend and all of that good stuff?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, Shock Factor podcast, we are releasing our mega regional preview, talking about all 64 teams. Oh, 2 hours will carry you through the week. You will enjoy that, hopefully. Shock Factor Pod, make sure you subscribe there, D1 Baseball Podcast Network. And then, at Cespedes BBQ, of course, they'll be tweeting about the regionals this weekend. All of our MLB work is at foxsports.com. You can find tags for both me and Jake Mintz on there. And you can see us covering the fancy Major League Baseball where they, you know, they big and strong and they use wood bats. It's not as exciting. I would honestly just focus on the regional this weekend. And, eat them up cats, right? I mean, that's what we're saying all week long.
That's the saying, eat them up cats. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, Stephen Schock will join us. Looking forward to that conversation here on BSN Extra. Hey, Bearcats. Sam Houston Athletics is moving to an all-digital ticketing platform beginning in the fall. Take advantage of the new ticketing system by accessing your season and individual game tickets online. Easily transfer tickets to family and friends, and avoid the ticket lines on game day. If you have any questions, reach out to the tickets office at 936-294-1729. Eat them up. And welcome back to BSN Extra. Jason Barfield here, and I'm now joined by... you've become college baseball royalty. Stephen Schock joining me here. And, good to have you on, first off. It's something I've been wanting to do all year long, but we've kind of been building a new podcast studio, so I didn't get to pod as much as I wanted to this spring. But good to have you on to talk a little regional baseball.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks for having me, because, you know, this is the best time of the year. I believe all Christmas songs were actually written about the college baseball postseason. So anytime you're like walking around in December and you hear it's the most wonderful time of the year, just know it's a big bold-faced lie, because the best time of the year is early June. So the first June that I was involved in the college baseball postseason heavily was probably 2021. And since then, I've been heavily involved with the college baseball postseason, obviously for different reasons. That was when I was playing. Now it's all just talking about college baseball, which is way easier, way less stress, don't get me wrong. But the month of June flies by. It happens so fast, so I'm excited.
So you've been living that college baseball life for a couple of years now, and those Christmas songs just hit a little bit different, right?
Oh, without a doubt. Baby, it's cold outside, not as much. That one, it's like, let's hope not.
That's definitely not like about opening. Omaha.
Yeah, no, that's more about opening day. but there's always a way that it'll come back. It can all relate if you try hard enough or don't think enough.
You know, it's funny. We got a chance to get to know each other in Round Rock this year and, you know, watch the Bearcats play, win over Iowa, win over Kansas State. And I think the talk at the time was everybody felt like, you know, this was a regional team. And, you know, certainly had to take a different route to get there maybe than we expected. I think, you know, we kind of figured the Bearcats would be squarely in that that mix for an at-large if they didn't win the tournament. But it got down to the WAC tournament. They had an RPI sitting in the 60-70, so you knew they had to win. I don't know. I know you were keeping up a little bit with the Bearcats. You know, just kind of what were some of your thoughts as you were watching what they were doing in the WAC tournament?
Yeah, so I kept up with them pretty much all season long. There's you guys probably know it better than I would because you guys are fans of it. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't be listening to this podcast. But, you know, there is a bit of a lull halfway through, I would say. But it's all about getting hot at the right time and winning when you really need to. And the conference tournament is a very good time to play your best baseball. And that's exactly what the Bearcats did. I mean, I know in baseball we aren't supposed to dwell on how far we've come because there's still work to do. But I was confident in saying after the conference tournament, hashtag ate them up cats instead of eat them up cats, because you ate them up. And it was awesome to watch. Like, I like Sam Houston. I don't care about your guys' baseball. Like, plain and simple, the baseball ability, don't care about it. You guys are great people. That's why I love you guys. And so when you guys succeed and have that baseball talent, it doesn't make me like you more or less, because I feel like liking people based on their abilities kind of a messed up thing to do. And I'm not a scout, so it's not my job to like whether or not they're good at baseball. They're just awesome people. You guys are fun to be around. You guys enjoy the game of baseball, and like, that's a team I'm always going to root for. Like, you'll see teams that are really good at baseball, but all the players look absolutely miserable. And like, it's impressive that it can be done, that someone can make people like dislike the sport that much, because it's the best game in the world. And it's the shame that some people will play at like these big schools and like have success, but under the covers, everybody's like, yeah, no, we hate it here. That is not what's happening at Sam Houston. Everybody loves it. The coaching staff's awesome. Like, y'all are just great people. So
love it.
I am happy love to see it. Y'all have.
So, well, before we get into the NCAA region, I do want to talk a little bit about, you know, you did continue to show that love throughout the year. Grand Canyon was a big series for this team, going out to Phoenix, you know, kind of right there early part of the season, a chance to make a statement. And it was one of the games for y'all to pick for your D1 baseball panel. And you went lone wolf on the Bearcats there. Only one rolling with Sam Houston that series, and the Cats go on and take 2-3 to make you look good.
Yeah, I mean, the only one to pick them. I was also coincidentally the only one who was correct. So thank you guys for making me look smart, because I picked it again. I'm probably the only guy who will go into the picks not looking at what you did last weekend or who you're going to start or who the matchups are. I go in and it's, do I like this team or do I like this team? And so I picked because I like you guys. So it was an easy choice for me, and even easier because I was right.
And then same thing for the tournament. Not very many people were picking Sam Houston in the WAC tournament. Still a lot of people going GCU. You had a couple other people going on your side taking Sam Houston. But once again, you know, here was a team that was kind of going in underdogs, which is kind of crazy because they went into the last week of the regular season with a chance to win the regular season conference title. But it still felt like, you know, nobody was really thinking Sam Houston there.
Yeah, honestly, I was surprised by it because, like, we go into our picks before we announce them, and, like, I can see who everyone picks. Everyone can see who I pick. And it's literally just a Google Doc where we go through it and we say, okay, we think this team's going to win, think this team's going to win. But I was looking, I was like, dang, not many people choosing the Cats. That's strange and also somewhat foolish to not choose the Cats. So, I was just thrilled to see you guys have that success.
Well, let's get into the regional. You know, it's the first time for Sam Houston in a regional since 2017. It's been a stretch. You know, this has been a team that was a perennial regional team, made the super regionals in 2017 after knocking off Texas Tech, went out to Florida State. And so this was a program that kind of became known in college baseball, but it's been a little bit. And, you know, first off, just seeing the Bearcats back in the regional, I think around here is certainly a big deal. It's a lot of, you know, it's kind of back where we belong mentality. But a lot of these guys haven't been there before, so they get the LSU regional. So we'll go out to Baton Rouge. Got LSU, who, of course, we saw in Round Rock, kind of throwing back those vibes. I was almost kind of half expecting Kansas State or Iowa to end up in that regional as well, you know.
When y'all got announced, I was like, oh, my God, we got the Carbach Round Rock Classic going again. But, no, I think you guys, it's said a lot in college baseball, so much that I joke about it, the unfinished business factor of it all. And, you know, LSU is the one team y'all have left to beat from Carbach. So, no time like the present to do it, I would say. And, again, I think it's a pretty decent regional draw. Obviously, LSU is a bit of a monster at the front of it, but, you know, they've shown a lot of signs recently as of late that they're human. You know, they're a normal baseball team. Like, they have their flaws just like everybody else. And so it's a matter of whether or not Sam Houston's going to, you know, when they ultimately play LSU, if they do, because, again, I don't know how all these, I'm very bad at forecasting how the games play after the ones right in front of me because, you know, just as a ball player, you're so present and you're so, okay, got to win what's right in front of me, got to be where my feet are. So I'm bad at forecasting it. But if they play LSU, that unfinished business is there, and I think they have a chance.
You know, it's funny with the way it's going to set up. You know, LSU is going to play the early game. They, as the host, they like to play that first game of the day. Give them a little bit more rest before the Saturday night game if they can pull out that first-round win. So Sam Houston will play Oregon State on Friday night at Alex Box. Should be an incredible atmosphere. And then the reward for winning that game is probably a Saturday night game against Paul Skeens. And, you know, congratulations, right?
Okay. Look, that's fun. That's fun. You get the opportunity. You get the opportunity to take down a beast, which is awesome, you know? I mean, we wouldn't know about David if it weren't for Goliath being there to get his ass kicked, right?
That's right.
Sorry, I don't know if I should swear. I'm sorry.
You're good.
but at the end of the day, I mean, like, Tulane, they get in, they sneak their way in by winning their conference tournament, and you know, they haven't really played up to what they could be, I would say. Like, they've been close to playing to their potential, but they haven't really been there. So it'll be interesting to see if they can piece it together. I know T.O. Banks for them has been huge. But, I look at this regional lot, and what's interesting about it is I don't really look at any of these teams and write them off right away. Like, I'm sure most people would write off Tulane, but I know their history. I've got a friend who plays there. I know, like, I got a feeling of the vibe of the team, and I like their team too. I love Sam Houston. I like Tulane too. Don't get me wrong. I'm still rolling with the Bearcats, but it's just like LSU is such a great regional comparatively to all the other regionals, because when you're at a host site and the host isn't playing, those games are like a barren wasteland of just, it's only your parents there. That's it. So the difference with LSU is the amount those people show up for baseball games. They don't care who it is. They're just going to show out. And I think the price was like $30 for a 3-day pass, which is crazy. Like, the prices are insanely good for some of these regionals, which I'm very happy to see. The NCAA isn't just looking for the money. They're trying for the exposure, it seems like, which is really good. And I like, again, LSU is one of the few regionals where there could be a game between Oregon State and Tulane, and it's like a sellout crowd because that's just how much they care down at the box.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned Oregon State. You know, obviously, you know, being in this area, we see LSU, you know, seen them this year, but you know, they cross paths with other Texas schools and schools in the area. So, you know, you kind of get to see LSU a little bit. Know a little bit about Tulane, just, you know, some of their history and stuff like that. Oregon State, you know, they're kind of that outlier that's coming in and, you know, a team that not a lot of people around here know a lot about. And I haven't really had a chance to dive much into them yet either. So, you know, I don't know if that's a team you're very familiar with, but, you know, if so, you know, just kind of what can we expect to see from Oregon State?
So Oregon State, the thing about them that's really interesting is I don't know who they're pitching. Like, their pitching is a mystery to me. They're good, whoever it is. They're good at pitching. But their offense really stands out. I mean, you got the guy from down under, Travis Bazana, who, I mean, that's just a fun name to say. You kidding me? Do me a favor. Can you say the name Bazana, B-A-Z-Z-A-N-A?
Bazana.
Travis, how'd that feel?
Travis Bazana. I feel like I'm going to be on the call, actually. I've got the broadcast all weekend long. So, you know, Bazana, huh?
Yeah. See, that feels good, though, right? It feels good to say.
Yeah. I'm hoping it's going to be in. There's a strikeout. Bazana is now 0 for 4 tonight. He's had a rough one at the plate.
Well, of course. But even if things go well for him, you at least have the comfort of knowing that the name feels like a hug. And then, you know, they got Garrett Forrester, too, who he's just incredible at the plate. Like, his basketball skills are kind of unmatched, I would say. And then Gavin Turley, he's a freshman this year who he came into Oregon State with just a ton of pop, and it's kind of taken him a while. Like, he's had flashes where we've seen that power, but it took him a while to really get settled and kind of start bringing it on a more consistent basis, I would say. But I think Travis Bazana, like, he's such a difference maker in this lineup. Like, he's batting .379 right now with 10 bombs and 20 doubles. So he's one guy that if you want to avoid him, it's not it, like walking him is not a bad thing. You know, it's like, okay, like we dodged a bullet there. I mean, he is fast, so he will try to steal a few times, but not a bunch, or well, a bunch actually. He stole 36 times. So maybe don't walk him.
Like, sorry, all the time.
I was looking at the wrong column. It was like 2 for 2, and I was like, wait a minute. No, he steals a lot. Yeah, so slide so, step when so, he's on first.
So a walk's a double first, is what you're saying.
Yeah, like their lineup is they're prolific offense, but I mean, you guys are a prolific offense too. So it's like, we're going to see a bit potentially a slugfest between you two. And that's nothing against any pitchers. Don't get me wrong. That's just the tip of the cap to both these offenses, I would say.
You know, from your experience as a player, you know, when you look at the trip that Oregon State's going to have to make, how big of a factor is that going from Oregon down to Baton Rouge, where it's going to be about 3,086% humidity, if I saw the weather report correct. You know, it's a long trip. It's a quick turnaround. It's teams that you've never seen before. How tough is that going to be for Oregon State?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge, especially from like a scouting perspective, because I mean, how much do you think Oregon State knows going in about Tulane? You know, it's just one of those things where they don't see each other. They aren't on each other's radars until the postseason. I've never played where I've changed time zones and gone back in time or forward in time. I don't really, once you get time zones involved, that's when things go off the rails for me. I cannot comprehend them. I hate them. They hurt my head. But I will say I would much rather play in an environment where I'm hotter than I normally am than an environment where I'm colder than I normally am. Because the cold, that brings out other factors where, like, you start thinking, oh, I can't feel my fingertips. As soon as you start thinking that, that ball's going in the stands. We don't know what's happening. But when it's warmer, it's just like, man, this sucks. Like, I feel bogged down. Like, it's a drag. So, like, you see the effects of a cold game right away, whereas a warmer game and, like, a climate where it's like, wow, where you are, why is the air sticky here? And that you see the effects of those typically later in the game. It's more like fatigue oriented, I would say.
So I know there's some teams here that you love. You've got some of your favorites in this regional, so I'm not going to pin you to a prediction here in this regional, but let's say for Sam Houston, for them to be playing on the last day, what do they have to do to be able to be in the mix on the final day in Baton Rouge?
So the main thing about regionals and what I gathered from playing in them is in order to win them, you got to stick to your guns. You know, you got to, whatever you're good at, you just got to deliver on that. So, like, it's not about who's going to make the extreme play, who's going to, you know, step up in the biggest moment. Those are all important. Don't get me wrong. But if you want to win, like, long-term, you got to stick to yourself, because otherwise people, like, when I try as a pitcher, for example, this is what I would do. I would try to be as big of a arrogant guy that other people did not like as I could be. That way the other team would try to embarrass me. They would try, instead of, you know, just shortening up and hitting a backside single off me, which is the easiest way to beat me as a submarine pitcher, they would try to hit long home runs and all this stuff, which is why, like, that gave me the ability to win in those situations. So anytime you're trying to do too much, that is when things are typically going to go off the rails for you. So I think for Sam Houston to be playing on the last day, they just got to stick to their guns, just stick to the way of baseball that they know how to play, which is just go out and absolutely crush it.
All right, so let's talk about your plan for the week. Where are you going to be posting up? Where are you going to be sitting and watching baseball? And kind of how are you planning to attack this regional weekend?
So this is a hard one for me because, as a few people know, I coach Delaware High School baseball, where we are in the semifinals. I believe we're in the semifinal round today. So we have a game today at 6 p.m. against the Caravelle Academy. But if we win today and win Thursday, we will have a championship game on Saturday. So if that happens, I will be watching from the couch most likely. But if not, I will be in Charlottesville, Virginia, watching on my former team. And of course, sitting in the stands, having a beer or two, wishing of what I once was, that I could reincarnate and once again be the closing pitcher for the University of Virginia, just because, you know, it's so much fun there. But I'm going to be there if all goes according to plan, if baseball-wise, like college-wise, and if things go poorly high school baseball-wise, which I'm not rooting for because these guys are awesome. And I really think the Vikings are hot this year, because I know everybody tuned into this podcast is really itching to know about the climate of Delaware high school baseball. The Cape Henlopen Vikings are very hot, so they could throw a wrench in the plan, but that wouldn't be the worst thing ever, because hopefully Charlottesville will have a super regional. So,
well, you still, you know, whatever happens, you're going to have baseball in your weekend, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's a non-negotiable. No matter what, I could get hit by a plane and I think there would still be baseball involved somehow. Hopefully I don't. There aren't many airports near me, so it'd be a real long shot. But again, stranger things have happened. But either way, I'm just so fired up to watch college baseball. So much of it's going to happen so fast. I'm excited the Maryland Terrapins are good at baseball this year. I'm just going on tangent after tangent now. But you haven't interrupted me, so I'll keep going. But I'm excited for the Terps, and here's why. When the Terps are good at baseball, one of their alumni, Scott Van Pelt, talks about them a lot, which is good for the game of college baseball as a whole. Therefore, I'm always rooting for the Terps. And you know, there's just, God, there's so much going on right now, and I'm going to do my best where if you are a normal, not insane person like me, who's like, I don't want to watch all, I can't watch that much. That's so much. Don't worry. Just follow me on Twitter and I'll post the highlights, the cool stuff and the good stuff, and we'll be good. And that way you can keep up there if you're into that sort of thing. So either way, like, no matter what happens, college baseball is the best game in the world, and we're going to get to experience a lot of it. And I'm so fired up.
We need to get, like, you in studio with Mike Rooney doing the all-day baseball whip around and checking in. I think that's where this is headed for you. I feel like that that putting you on the desk with Runes would be incredible.
That's like my absolute dream. The only chance, like, if Pagini was like, you got one wish related to squeeze play, my wish would be that I could show up, but, you know, just in a hoodie and sweatpants like I normally am, while everyone else is in suits. And it's like, yeah, no, that's just Steve. He watches so much college baseball. And oh, that's weird. I said that thing about planes, so I'm a little on edge right now about a plane hitting me. And for whatever reason, a Blue Angel just flew over my house. I'm near Air Force Base, probably about 40 minutes away. So it's normal.
So it's stuff. Normal.
The nation's not under attack. It's just a test flight. But sorry. I was like, what is that? Okay. But no, squeeze play, like Rooney on that, I don't know how he does it. That guy is built so different than everybody else. And I hope to get to the level of like being able to walk into so many different things that he is one day. Cause I mean, the dude's like the best multitasker in the whole wide universe. Like,
and, but to be fair, your Twitter feed is like the squeeze play of Twitter though, right? I mean, you're bouncing around all over the place.
That's what I try to do. And like, whenever I tune into a game and it's like, oh crap, this is the ninth, there's two outs, there's a runner on third, like I try to fire off a tweet as fast as I can where I'm like, well, look, if you want to tune in. That's why I'd love to like have a show where I could just be like, okay, well, this plays in the ninth, or this game's in the ninth, so we're just gonna put the stream up and talk about it. Like, that makes so much sense. And like, I feel like that would really help the game of college baseball, because it's like red zone for college baseball, essentially. And it just makes it so much easier to consume, which, you know, thank God for Michael Rooney in the postseason. That guy's a saint.
Grinder, absolute grinder when it comes to college baseball.
Yeah. And thank God for Michael Rooney the rest of the year too. I love the guy, but especially during squeeze play.
Well, you've been the host of the Shock Factor podcast, and you've had a chance to really dive in full time this year and cover college baseball. What has that experience been like for you, and kind of what have you seen from the game, you know, from this side of things?
It's honestly like the best experience of my life. Like, it's honestly a dream come true. I always dreamed of being a baseball broadcaster because, you know, a lot of guys, they grow up and they're like, or they're growing up and they're like, wow, I'd really love to play the MLB. Like, it'd be cool to make the money they make. And I was at that point for a long time, but I remember I watched The Sandlot when I was little, and I remember everyone was like, I want to be like Benny the Jet. Like, okay, yeah, cool. Like Benny the Jet, sick. I want to be like Smalls, where I got to talk about Benny the Jet for a living. Because I look at that and I'm like, okay, Benny the Jet, his knees probably hurt all the time. His back's probably tight. Smalls is just chilling in a press box, hanging out while Benny's down there getting dirty in the weeds of it. But it, like, broadcasting so much fun. I really love college baseball and like love sharing my weird perspective on it. Cause you know, when you play for 6 years, it becomes your life. And like, as a player, it's so important to kind of have that separation between who you are as a person and who you are as a ball player. And that can get really hard when you're playing, but when you're broadcasting, much, much easier.
It's not a bad life,
but, but yeah, it's been so much fun. It's honestly been like a dream come true to just be able to talk about what I love for a bit of a living, which is fun. I was talking about how dreadful it is when, when the season ends and I got to go back to, you know, normal life for a little bit. But I'm hoping to find ways I can bring out some content over the summer and fall that will be beneficial to fans of college baseball and get people talking about the game and times other than just the spring.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Well, I'm going to go and let you know, I know you've got a busy day as you're prepping for a playoff game in the Delaware High School playoffs. So good luck with that.
It'll be a big one.
I hope you get some college baseball in you, but, you know, hopefully your team can bring home a championship as well. So, find the best of both worlds there.
It's win-win, really. It's, as you know, growing up a ball player, you are associated with the game of failure. You got to trick yourself into ways to be positive, I think. And, you know, Jason, you met me. I think I'm a pretty positive guy. I think I've done a good job of finding ways to trick myself. And as an adult, sometimes you got to trick yourself to where if something bad happens, something good can happen because of that. So that's where, you know, Delaware State High School playoffs and in the middle of the college postseason, it's great because, you know, I want to keep winning and I would love to win another state championship with these guys. But if, you know, worst case, if it doesn't, at least I can fall back on the college baseball to bring me joy. So that if you listen to me and you want to take away one thing from this, the best piece of life advice I can give you is set up everything you can to do fun stuff, even when bad stuff could potentially happen, because that's the only way to find balance.
I love it. Absolutely love it. All right. Well, I appreciate you joining me. Hopefully we can,
let's do this again
next week. Hopefully the Bearcats are prepping for a super regional and, we can talk a little bit about that too.
The only difference is I'll sound a little different because I will be foaming at the mouth with excitement. Okay. So thank you very much again, Jason. You're an absolutely awesome person. One of my favorite parts of the season was meeting you. You're great for the game.
Thank you.
Thank you for being.
I appreciate it.
Well, I would have, truth be told, I would have never had the nuts to get in the booth if you didn't kind of just throw me in a headset and say, hey, you're on play-by-play. And I was like, well, this guy's so nice. I don't want to let him down. So you kind of forced me into living my dreams. So thank you.
And you've gotten in the booth really, again truthfully. Since then, haven't you? I've seen that you've gotten a chance to call some other games. So look at
that. I've gotten to call four, which it's so much fun because I just ramble on, which if you're at this point in the episode, you might have noticed I do that from time to time. but no, it's been honestly incredible. And I couldn't have done it without you. So thank you.
I appreciate it. Stephen Schock, Schock Factor Podcast, at BigDonkey47 on Twitter. So give him a follow. Give him a listen. Like I said, he will be the squeeze play of Twitter this weekend. So if you want to know what's happening in the baseball regionals, that's a good place to start. So appreciate you joining us.
I love it. Thank you again, Jason.
All right, appreciate it. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. I want to thank Jordan Schusterman and Stephen Schock for joining me. Two good guys covering the game of college baseball. Two good follows on social media. So give those guys a follow. Check out the content that they're putting out. I got a chance to meet them down in Round Rock earlier this year. They do a tremendous job covering this game. So be sure to follow them as we move on through the week. Be sure to follow all of our social channels as well, at BearcatVid, at BearcatsBSB, as we're going to be posting content throughout the week as we lead up to Friday night's first pitch and then through the weekend regional. This week's episode is recorded in the all-new studios in the Wood Forest Bank Athletic Center. This episode was written and produced by Jason Barfield. All music is courtesy ScottHolmesMusic.com. This has been a presentation of the Bearcat Sports Network.